This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us for a special look at the military coup d'etats that rocked the African continent over the past year. I'm your host, Yehiyes Wuhib.
They demand an end to the military and civilian partnership and call for the creation of a civilian technocratic government to finish the remaining transitional period.
That's Michael Atit in Khartoum reporting on Sudan's coup in 2021. These stories and more coming up on this pre-recorded special edition of African News Tonight. ...2021 saw several military takeovers and attempted military coups in Africa. The reasons are complex, but in most cases, regional political analysts say there are similarities. In this program, Africa News Tonight takes a deeper look at the countries affected by coups. We start with Sudan. It has been a little more than 3 years since Sudan's December 2018 revolution began, leading to the ouster of longtime President Omar al-Bashir 4 months later. Sudan's military leaders and political forces agreed to a power-sharing government for a 39-month transitional period. In October, General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan suspended the cabinet and detained several civilian leaders, including Prime Minister Abdullah Hamdok. Michael Atit in Khartoum reports on what happened.
Sudan's military and civilian partnership was mandated to carry out economic, security, judicial reforms over 39 months. The military was to lead the sovereign council for 21 months, and then civilian politicians would lead for 18 months. However, by the middle of 2021, the military and civilian officials in the transitional government began exchanging accusations over failures to fully implement those reforms. The head of Sudan's Sovereign Council, Abdel Fattah al-Burhan, and his supporters blamed some government officials for focusing more on competing over positions rather than providing basic services to citizens. Before the coup, al-Burhan said politicians had lost the vision of the 2019 revolution and are blaming the military for all of the country's problems.
We have not seen any political party talking about the national election, democracy, or talking about how we will end this transitional period. We have not seen any of the political forces organizing a public rally with our grassroots communities. None of them is ready to go and address their problems. Citizens are left alone and politicians are here busy wrangling and quarreling over positions and pointing fingers of failure.
On October 25th, General al-Burhan suspended the cabinet and detained Prime Minister Abdullah Hamdok and other civilian leaders. After weeks of growing public protest, al-Burhan reached a deal with Hamdok, who resumed his position on November 21st. Some citizens say Hamdok betrayed the Sudanese revolutionaries by agreeing to the deal. Hamdok said he agreed to help calm the protests and avoid conflict. Sudanese political parties and pro-democracy groups rejected the agreement and continue to protest. They demand an end to the military and civilian partnership and call for the creation of a civilian technocratic government to finish the remaining transitional period. The military has cracked down on the protest. Sudan's Doctors' Central Committee reported that nearly 50 protesters have been killed and more than 500 others wounded since the October's military takeover. Several Sudanese analysts described the coup as a violation of the constitution. Some warned against the use of force on the peaceful protesters in the country, saying it may increase public anger against military rule. Sudanese writer and political analyst Abdul Munaim Hamid says he remains concerned and disappointed over the actions of the military leaders and call for a political consensus to resolve the matter.
The situation in Sudan is extremely disappointed. Yes, everything is going upside down, and we are ruled or controlled by the Islamists, and it is one of the worst regime or government.
Hamid says military rule in Sudan will not succeed because of the bad experience the country had under President Omar al-Bashir for 3 decades. Sudanese youth activist Muhammad Shukur says despite the use of force, protesters will continue to resist and demand a civilian-led government in Sudan.
We believe that the revolution has been stolen, and instead of us commemorating something unfinished, we were supporting that revolution. And they are revolting again to actually overthrow al-Burhan and the military regime that now is taking over the government, because by now it's supposed to be a civilian government, because the military have already finished their term and they're supposed to hand over, but they did not hand over the government.
Shukur says he believes one of the motives of the military takeover on October 25th is to block the civilian component from leading Sudan's Sovereign Council. Regional and international entities have condemned the military coup in Sudan and threatened to suspend some financial assistance should the military continue to act unilaterally. For VOA News, I'm Michael Atit in Khartoum.
Next, we move to West Africa. The government of Guinea was overthrown in a military coup d'etat in early September of 2021. Corruption and overreach by President Alpha Conde were some of the contributing factors. Ricky Shryock in Dakar takes a look at the coup and its aftermath.
Gunfire rang out in the morning of September 5th in Guinea's capital city, Conakry. By the end of the day, President Alpha Conde had been ousted from power and replaced by a military junta headed by Special Forces Commander Mamadi Doumbouya. Gilles Yabi, founder of West African research group WATI, says many factors contributed to the coup in mineral-rich Guinea. One was Conde's move to change the constitution in 2020 to allow himself to run and ultimately win a third term.
Plenty of Guineans applauded the coup d'etat, not because they were in favor of the coup, but because Alpha Conde, they saw a good thing in him, living to have a new experience.
Conde was the country's first democratically elected president in decades. He was elected to his first term in 2010 after years of transition following a 2007 coup. He pledged to reform the country's mining sector. Guinea is the world's second largest producer of bauxite, the ore needed to produce aluminum. It also has iron ore, gold, and diamond deposits. Human Rights Watch says the mining sector provided $544 million to the government of Guinea in 2018. Despite this revenue, most of the country's 13 million residents lack access to good quality education, healthcare, and infrastructure. Many analysts agree corruption is pervasive in the country. Human Rights Watch notes that Conde's mining ministry strengthened management of mining revenue and began distributing mining sector profits to local governments for the first time. Yabi says some economic improvements were made during Conde's tenure. Despite this, both democracy and economic reforms seem to be falling short for the population at large. He notes governance and economics are related, but do not always go hand in hand.
There is not always a line between the two. You can have a government that is not very democratic, but manages to improve the lives of the population. And then you can have one that is democratic and there is no improvement in daily lives.
On the other hand, Guinean businessman Pop So said the coup rattled foreign investors.
Like the banks, they advance a lot of money into some projects. Now they are in they don't know what is going to happen. Did their investment, will their investment be respected? Will the state respect whatever was decided before? I mean, it's a lot of things that we have to question.
So added that while democratic norms are often unstable in the country, the creation of national unity needs to be addressed before democracy will truly take root.
Yes, I think before democracy, we must build a nation. Over here, there is no nation yet. Community identification or like ethnic identification is higher than national identification. But saying I am Fula or I am Mandingo or I am this or that has a lot more meaning for them. However, the pride of the Guineans, of being Guineans, is a very good start to rebuild the nation.
The transitional government has said it will be willing to stand up to the mining industry to make sure environmental and social norms are respected. I'm Ricky Shryock for VOA News, Dakar.
And in May of 2021, Mali's government was overthrown in a coup for the second time in less than a year. Some regional analysts say the internal power struggles that caused the coup remain 7 months later. We have Ricky Shryock again reporting from Dakar.
Putschists in Mali led a successful coup against then-President Ba Ndaw in May. Coup leader Colonel Assimi Goïta told journalists that Ndaw and Prime Minister Mokhtar Ouane failed in their duties and were seeking to sabotage the country's transition from a coup the year before. Mali analyst Nyagale Bakayoko, president of the African Security Sector Network, calls the crisis multidimensional and elaborated on one power struggle.
Because of a disagreement between the prime minister and president of the transition, finally, Colonel Goïta decided to overthrow, to put an end to this civilian transition and to nominate himself as the new president of Mali. And this is where we are standing today.
Bakayoko adds that social tensions stoked the fire of what would be Mali's second coup in less than a year.
It was also a period where massive syndicate protests and strikes were held all over the country, with a lot of disturbance for the economy, etc., etc. And Colonel Goïta considered that the president and prime minister were absolutely unable to address those social protests.
While Goïta initially promised to lead an 18-month transitional government and organize elections by February 2022, he later announced that timeline cannot be met. The Economic Community of West African States, ECOWAS, has called on transitional leaders to keep the election deadline and impose sanctions, including travel bans and asset freezes, on members of the transitional government. Mali analyst and researcher Bokar Sangare says the country now faces pressure from the international community to hold elections and institute democratic reforms.
Ce qui se passe au Mali, c'est tout. On est toujours dans ce schéma-là où la communauté internationale.
We are always on this path where the international community formulates expectations, the elections, the formation of a government, or even the general way of governing the country. This continues to dig a hole between the international community and the opinion at the heart of the country. They do not let the country have the possibility to create themselves something, maybe, that is adapted in their context.
Interim authorities said they will confirm an election date in January 2022. Coup leader Goïta has voiced his preference of holding a national consultation before holding elections. The political upheaval is coupled with a decade-long struggle to stem extremist violence in the country's central and northern regions. The attacks have displaced 385,000 civilians and worsened the human rights situation. In December, Human Rights Watch accused Malian authorities of torture and the forced disappearance of six men for up to 2 months. Human Rights Watch Sahel Director Corinne Dufka says, though the transitional government has taken some steps toward improving human rights, the torture allegations need to be addressed.
Under the transitional government, there has been some progress made in cases of corruption and in cases of, in one case, the assault or the disappearance and alleged killing of a journalist. Those are positive steps. However, human rights activists have expressed concern about the instrumentalization of the judiciary, in that those being pursued appear to have been opponents of the current transitional government.
Malian security forces have also been accused of human rights abuses while fighting religious extremist violence in the country's north and central regions. The attacks from armed groups have plagued communities since a military coup in 2012. The attacks eventually spilled into neighboring Niger and Burkina Faso. According to the United Nations, violent attacks across Mali, Niger, and Burkina Faso rose eightfold from 2015 to 2020. I'm Ricky Shryock for VOA News, Dakar.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. Coups and coup attempts occurred with more frequency in Africa this year as the democratic states struggled to cope with COVID-19, weakened economies, and a host of other issues. VOA's Carol Van Damme takes a closer look at where these military takeovers took place and what might be fueling their surge on the continent.
Sudan's military coup in October, the fourth in Africa this year, highlights the complicated international picture in which military strongmen have gained power at a time when coups have all but disappeared elsewhere around the globe. There were at least seven coup attempts in Africa this year. In Chad, Guinea, and Mali, military leaders took control of governments weakened by foreign influence and poor governance, combined with insecurity and deteriorating economies. Military coups were attempted but foiled in Madagascar, the Central African Republic, and Niger. Joseph Siegel, director for research at the African Center for Strategic Studies in Washington, D.C., says before 2021, governments had been relatively stable.
We had been seeing a real decline in the number of coups in Africa over the last couple of decades. And in fact, you know, it was increasingly seen as a rare and hopefully diminishing event. But this past year and in the last couple of years, really, we've seen a real spike in the number of these extra constitutional changes in leadership.
Siegel says a steady decline in democratic norms helped fuel military takeovers on the continent, noting that 13 African leaders have evaded term limits since 2015.
In the last few years, we've seen leaders evade term limits in Togo, in DRC, in Egypt, in Guinea, in South Sudan, in Republic of Congo, in Rwanda, in Burundi. So there have been a host of places where that has happened.
Siegel says military coups are also happening with more frequency in Africa because military leaders haven't paid a huge price for manipulating electoral outcomes or seizing power. In years past, Siegel says such actions would have exacted suspensions from international bodies and sanctions. Some analysts think the trend of military coups started in Zimbabwe in 2017, when Robert Mugabe was losing his grip on power after 37 years in office. Mugabe increasingly relied on the military to repress opposition over the years.
The military had become increasingly politicized during the end of his time. And, you know, the military leaders at the time calculated that, you know, they weren't going to wait around for him to pass on and there to be new elections.
18 months later, tightly controlled elections were held, which allowed military leaders to remain in power. Siegel says what happened in Zimbabwe signaled to the rest of Africa that military takeovers were no longer taboo.
And that the rules of the game had shifted and the standards for democracy had been lowered.
Regional players like the African Union and the Intergovernmental Authority on Development, or IGAD, as well as world leaders, have a critical role to play in Sudan's future, according to Siegel.
I think the international community has not sent a clear enough signal that this this latest coup in Sudan won't stand. And so there's some murky signals being sent about just whether it would be viable or not.
U.S. and other Western leaders have urged General Bernhan to restore the transitional government without preconditions in Sudan and allow democracy to take its course. In September, U.N. Secretary General Antonio Guterres expressed concern that military coups are back and blamed a lack of unity among those in the international community in their response to military interventions. He warned that geopolitical divisions in the world were allowing a sense of impunity to take hold. Carol Van Damme for VOA News, Washington.
2021 was a year of coups and military takeovers in Africa, triggering concern worldwide that the continent's democratic gains in recent years are eroding. African states, through the African Union, the AU, and the international community, condemned the events and threatened the coup leaders with punitive action, all of which did not seem to have much effect. Darren Taylor has more.
In April, news emerged that the president of Chad, Idriss Deby, had died on the battlefield in a skirmish with rebels in the north of the country. According to Chad's constitution, the Speaker of Parliament should have assumed leadership. Instead, the military took over and installed Deby's son, Mahamat, as president. Senior researcher at the Stockholm International Peace Research Institute, Dr. Isaka Sure, says the Chadian saga symbolizes the AU's inconsistency in handling coups.
Its instruments are clear in that when there is a military coup, a military takeover or coming to power through unconstitutional means, that country is suspended. And then the African Union engages with the new authorities with the aim of gauging their intention but helping, accompanying them to restore constitutional order.
None of this happened in Chad's case. Coup specialist and politics professor at York University in the United Kingdom, Dr. Remy Adekoya, says in principle, African and international leaders condemn military takeovers, but it's mostly useless rhetoric.
Those who have taken over know that, look, at the end of the day, once you've taken over, you are now in control of the state. And so they also are simply going to go along with these criticisms and say, yes, of course, we're going to restore democracy and we're going to have such and such transition plan and we'll have elections in 2 years and 3 years. And, you know, it's sort of a game which everybody plays and everybody knows they're being a little bit disingenuous about it.
Sware says international powers are consistently hypocritical in their reaction to coups in Africa.
France proved very, very inconsistent and even incoherent when you talk about Chad and Mali. About Chad, they welcome the situation there, you welcome the president at the Elysee, and you hammer on Mali.
He believes African economic blocs and leaders themselves could prevent a lot of coups with proactive responses to abuses on the continent.
When you see a situation simmering, you see a precedent truncating the basic principles of democratic rule, and you leave that one unchecked, even if you have clear instruments against that. In my view, that can discredit your principled instrument. So it's to look at...
But Adekoya says there can be good reasons for many African leaders to ignore anti-democratic behavior.
We're talking about a group of people who have some kind of, you know, vested interest in maintaining a status quo. And so when leaders like Museveni in Uganda rig the constitution or change the constitution, God knows how many times, in order to be able to perpetuate themselves in power, there's muted response from his fellow brothers and sisters, mostly brothers in this case, within that elite club.
Sware says the way toward preventing more coups is for member states to give the AU real authority to hurt administrations that come to power through unconstitutional means.
It can effectively sanction member states that default on their undertakings as per the various instruments. But if a member state can say, okay, they will suspend us, so what? We have to get to a stage where, like the European Union saying, Greece, if you don't do this one, we will cut off subsidies to your farmers, we will do this, we will do that, and Greece sees that as...
But Adekoya says sanctions often hurt citizens more than the perpetrators of political crimes themselves. Yes, says Sure, it's not an easy route to go, but he argues sanctions imposed on Africans by Africans and the public pressure on abusive regimes that will follow may be the best passage toward preventing or at least decreasing military takeovers in the future. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
And that wraps up this special pre-recorded edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Nadia Taha, thank you again for tuning in and choosing the Voice of America.